One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say? Oh, yeah, time's passing by.
Welcome back to the program at long last. I'm Ryan. With me remotely is Dave Callens.
What's going on, buddy?
And Robert Timothy.
Woohoo!
That was a very sad woohoo.
Yeah, no, that was pretty sad.
Well, sorry. I was elongating it because we had so many times without woohoos that you have to just kind of add a few together.
They've been building up inside you?
How have you guys been holding up? This isn't only the first time that we've podcasted in a long time. This is the first time we've talked, all three of us.
Yeah. Yes. I forget what this podcast is about. Are we going to talk about Alpha Brain and DMT? What are we doing here?
I was thinking we'd lampoon old movies because I don't know of any podcast that does that.
I'm fucking great because I got like a working dick and I can walk. This is fantastic, man. Like
I really hope the people listening heard the last episode for that reference.
No. I really hope they didn't. I'm going to take it offline, actually. No, yeah, I'm psyched, dude. Life is awesome. I can walk. I can play with my kid. I can wrestle with my son and go walk a dog. And
is he able to pin you yet? Is your son able to pin you in wrestling?
So no joke. He just turned three. I have now taught him to take full mount, collar control, post up, and then he pins your shoulders and yells, "I win!"
That's crazy, right, man. Has he tried DMT?
Bobby, I'm calling you out on that. We're going to set up a match of your son versus Ryan.
Oh, dude, I'll tape it for you guys. You can watch it. It's great.
I've been holding up pretty good over here too. I got from enjoying the break from stand-up to really missing it, and then kind of wondering what stand-up's gonna look like when it comes back. You know, that's the big thing. Like, through this whole time, we've all been saying, yeah, when these 2 months are over, we all just thought, like, oh, it'd be a little hiccup, and then we'd all go back to the way it was, and we'd be like, ah, wasn't it crazy that we were home for a month and a half? But I don't know. And the thing is, I just booked my first stand-up gig back, which is going to be on August 28th here in San Diego. It'll be an outdoor thing. And I'm a little nervous. I asked them specifically, don't have me as the headliner, because I haven't even looked at my material in 5 months. I don't know how much of it, like, I can still do post COVID. You know what I mean? Do you guys feel that way?
A lot of jokes about coughing in people's faces, stuff like that.
Well, no, hey. It's all situational shit that I definitely wasn't doing. Like, hey, I was in Seattle last week. No, you weren't.
Yeah. Every interaction with another human being would be irreparably different, to the point where it's like, no. You're talking about, like, what, this is like a story from like 2019? No, fuck this. Yeah. No, I want now. I want now. It's not believable.
Exactly. I do have some COVID stuff, but all my pre-COVID material, I might as well be telling a joke that pertains to Blockbuster or Circuit City.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If it involves talking to anyone but my wife or being in my house. Here's one thing that's been annoying me. I know people don't mean it maliciously, and they actually, quite the opposite, they're trying to help, is I've lamented publicly a couple times how bummed I've been being without the thing I do, you know, which is stand-up. Like, that is how I identify. That's my personality. That's who I am. And I believe that's the same of you guys, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, Bobby can relate because he finally got his dick back, so. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I would have loved to go do an open mic, but then there's none of those now, so I'm not doing that as well.
And so I've had this kind of, like, crisis of self-worth because, like, I've been in a comic almost my entire adult life. I mean, I've been at that for 11 years. If I'm not that, like, you know, who am I? And I've said that, and people say this, like, friends or people online, whatever, and they don't mean it in a bad way, but they go, oh, just do something else. You got to find something else to do. Which, here's the thing about that. It took me a long time to find stand-up. I had to fail at a lot of other things before I discovered stand-up. I tried music when I was a teenager, and I sucked at that. I made a failed run to be a MMA fighter. It didn't work out. I did all these things, trying to be an actor, a teacher, all these things. I finally found stand-up, and now it's gone. People are like, yeah, just go through all that shit again.
Sounds like your buddy is tacking on to Ivanka Trump's campaign. Find something new.
Yeah, find something new. It's almost like Gwyneth Paltrow saying you guys should really use this time. You know, have your nannies watch your kids. You know, maybe go for a walk in your horse paddock. I don't know.
I like to think that Ryan's job selection was like a 2010s version of The Village People. He's like, there was an MMA fighter there. I was a teacher.
Well, okay, wait. Now you mentioned that, but you're not far off because, like,
am I not?
Honestly,
okay.
Honestly, no. I was looking for a job. The thing that I was always scared about as a kid and through now was having a life that was just unremarkable. That just one of those guys that, you know, is just like, yeah, I work for receiving at this company. We pack manuals and, you know, that's all I do. And in 2 weeks out of the year, I get vacation. I guess that's pretty cool. But other than that, I don't really do anything. I don't have a passion for anything. I just couldn't have that, you know. So I wanted some job that it would be unusual that I could really be passionate about. So, yeah, that's why I pursued all those weird things. Because, I mean, you guys have to understand that, right?
Yeah. Speaking of which, I would like both of you to consider investing in an emu farm with me.
Oh, those fuckers are mean. Scheme.
I know. Oh, I know.
Oh, I'm not getting into bed with Big Emu. No, sir. I've heard that old yarn. So anyway, the long and short of that story is when you tell like a stand-up comic or a musician or anybody whose passion is suspended right now, just find something else. You're basically saying relive your life completely again immediately.
Yeah.
Do all the steps that it took you to find whatever your passion is that's gone right now. Well, then redo all that.
Well, Ryan, it's funny you bring that up because I don't know if you saw this. A mutual friend of ours posted today on Facebook something similar about this article that is going around about like, oh, how this 31-year-old paying off $200,000 in student loans in just a year.
Right.
And so you look at the article, and it's like she got a job from her mom at a nonprofit that her mom runs and owns. And then her and her fiance moved into a condo that her mom gave her.
Huh.
And then from there, they actually moved into their grandparents' house so they could rent out the condo.
Why did you even publish this?
Then they started making extra payments on the student loans. And then at the end, the woman has the fucking audacity to say, if I can do it, anybody can.
No.
Yeah.
I like the article that says, here's the money moves that you should make if you only have just $1,000 in the bank. I'm like, pay mortgage? That about covers it.
Yeah, I saw an article the other day. It's like, where should I invest $1,000 right now? I'm like, invest? Are you shitting me? I need that. That's going to bills.
How do I stop getting an overdraft fee? That's the article I'd like to see, please. Speaking of articles, there's something that keeps coming up that is coming up more and more lately. The narrative of conspiracy theories has shifted, and now I keep seeing the same people that said virus is fake, masks don't work, they've shifted to child sex trafficking. Anytime I see some like right-wing nut job losing an argument, all of a sudden he's like, do you people know that the Democrats are trying to peddle kids? So, Bobby, catch us up on what that's about.
Child sex trafficking? Well, no. Ryan.
No.
Of course you've talked to me because of my expertise in the situation.
That's right. Yeah. You just offered to watch me have you like film your kid wrestle or something.
That's right. So from what I understand, what's really interesting is, so obviously there are like pedophiles and there are people who like traffic and child
yes,
porn.
Yes, of course. I'm not suggesting that doesn't exist.
Sam Harris just put out a very interesting podcast this week that was actually made many, many, many months ago that looked into a lot of that kind of stuff. I think what it is, though, is there's a great rallying point for conspiracy theorists. That's why you get like Pizzagate and stuff, because everybody can get on board with don't touch kids. Like, that's
right,
a real
exactly.
easy, this is an evil bad guy. It's like the Nazi thing.
Apparently not everybody can get on board with that.
Right. Not as many as you'd hope.
Yeah. Well, even in public, though, those people, they're not just like going around like, look what I do, right? Like,
right.
They have to, in public.
No, they are.
Also,
they're leaving clues. Aren't you guys following this? There's
that's
symbols
true.
And there's...
Right.
So, like, I think what it is if you take something that is an objective evil that everybody on any plane would go, yeah, that's bad, that's horrible, like, that needs to be stopped or avoided or whatever, and then you paint that with to something you don't like, you can then try and say, look, we can all agree this sucks, right? And so, like, for conspiracy theorists, it's really popular for that to happen.
Yeah, I think that's what's going on. Now, again... I'm not suggesting that sex trafficking doesn't happen at a global level. That it absolutely does. There's horror stories.
Well, yeah, as an expert, as Ryan said, I can attest to that.
Oh, my. no, but what I'm saying is, like, it's very hard to argue with someone who all of a sudden invokes the name of child sex trafficking. And I think that's why they do it, to Bobby's point, which is like, dude, this thing that we're arguing about completely separate. Let's just, for argument's sake, say we're talking about masks. Like, dude, here's the evidence about masks working for the virus, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they're like, Tom Hanks has sex with children. You're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Oh, I get what you're saying. You're saying your fourth child trafficking. This conversation happened to me. Some wannabe that hangs out at the Comedy Store did it. He was like, so your fourth child sex trafficking? I'm like, no, I'm just saying we're not talking about that right now. What are you what?
That's the weirdest angle, is when they bring it up and say, like, oh, this mask issue is just a distraction. Like, we can't think about two different issues at the same time?
So you're saying that I should put a mask on while meanwhile Ellen DeGeneres is having sex with children. Like, so yeah, that's the thing, is that it's not so much that they're, I'm not decrying them for being against child sex trafficking. I'm saying they're bringing it up at odd times and naming people like Tom Hanks.
Yes.
That's the part I find weird.
And what a weird target. Tom Hanks. Like, there is one reason to hate Tom Hanks. There's absolutely one reason and only one.
Bosom
reason.
Buddies.
No. Because of Chet Hanks. That is the only reason that it's acceptable.
Chet Hanks is quietly growing on me.
Is that a character he does? Who's Chet Hanks?
Chet Hanks is one of Tom Hanks's sons who, like, obviously grew up as, like, a multimillionaire.
He's the one that's not Colin.
Yeah, he's the, and that's a great way to refer to him. He's the one who, he grew up a multimillionaire in Malibu, but he's, like, a gangster rapper, and it's...
Oh, Jesus.
And he's, like, serious, though? Like, you would think he's doing, like, a Joaquin Phoenix, like, Long Con or something?
For our older listeners, Chet Hanks is the Joe Estevez of that family.
This isn't a Jamie Kennedy sketch or something?
I think it's based on one.
He is a real-life Jamie Kennedy sketch, and I'm super excited that you don't know about this, Dave, because I have just given you a gift. To any audience members out there who are listening, I have just given you a gift. Look up Chet Hanks and just spend the next 30 minutes going, this is real?
So, yeah, anyway, yeah, people like Tom Hanks are named. And here's what infuriates me about it, is there's so many victims that are telling real stories that live through this kind of thing. They're like, hey, here's some people that legitimately abuse me, like Prince William or Andrew. I forget which one.
One of them princes.
Yeah, two princes. I think that's what that Spin Doctor song was about. Like, there's people that are like, yeah, these real accusers, and people aren't interested in hearing them out at all. But all of a sudden, an anonymous person on the internet that will only go by Q and says things like, I have top secret clearance somewhere. Yeah. Here's a list of names. People are like, how can you argue evidence? I'm like, why don't you have this passion and gusto for a fucking a child that says, hey, these people abuse me, because there's no celebrities attached to it? That's what fucking makes me upset.
Dude, I think that's why Corey Feldman's was kind of like fell flat almost. Like, they made a big deal about him releasing names. He finally did. And everyone's like, oh, I don't know who those people are.
Oh, that's not a celebrity. Wait, that was just a guy that was an extra and licensed to drive. Boo, not exciting.
My favorite is the QAnon one, which I love. Ryan, you picked a good one. By the way, it's Department of Energy. That's where the Q clearance is. Department of Energy.
Naturally.
Of course. My favorite thing about that is, like, if you ever do some actual research into it, that's a Chet Hanks story in and of itself, because...
What, you mean the Department of Energy is about to drop a sick mixtape?
No, but if you ever get deep into the QAnon conspiracy, like, it is so ridiculous, because he made these predictions. He would be like, in 3 days, the government's going to raid everything and steal your cars and put a bunch of Democrats in jail, and Trump's going to drain the swamp.
Like, is that where my car went? Jeez.
He put these out, and they never, obviously, never came true. Like, none of this shit happened, and people just kept believing. It is insane. It is.
Well, here's the thing. I don't follow Q at all. I just see it, like, peripherally from people that post shit.
Yeah.
But one of my buddies, who's crazy conspiracy theorist, back in March, he posted, hey, get ready for all communications blackout.
Yes.
For 3 to 5 days while they go and arrest somebody. It might happen. And so I waited like a month. I went back to the post. I'm like, hey, what happened? I was like, well, that's why I said it might happen.
Like, oh, I feel like, so there's no rules anymore.
I think Q probably does that with all his posts. Like, this might happen, you guys.
Well, now what he's done, because he had so many, like, failed predictions, what he just started doing is randomly typing letters in and pretending that it's, like, a secret code. So that no matter what happens later, his followers can then post hoc look at a message and be like, look, this is what he was saying.
Reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
So that's what bothers me is that no one's listening to actual survivors if their story isn't sexy enough.
Yeah.
By the way, I mentioned Ellen DeGeneres back there. What a fall from grace that chick's having.
Yeah,
that's been fun to watch.
It's always good. Like there is a weird Schadenfreude. Like I think we all had kind of like what we were talking about before about how it's just kind of safe to hate somebody. You feel that with like Epstein or you feel that with Weinstein, but like. There's a thing about Ellen, too, because how horrible... It's one thing if you're Weinstein. Everybody in Hollywood knew... Weinstein's a horrible monster. He's a terrible whatever. He's a monster, right? But everybody in Hollywood knew he was an asshole. He had a reputation for being an asshole. The fact that, like, Ellen skated on this reputation of being really nice, but was horrible to people around her... The fact that it's so duplicitous and those people who you treat like shit then have to go home and watch like Us Weekly be like, look, Ellen's making cupcakes and look how cool she is.
Oh, she's dancing again. How cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that very much harkens back to anyone that's been abused by someone in any fashion in Hollywood, is that you have to turn on your TV and see their dumb face every time you flick it on. You have to see billboards you drive past with them smiling and you know and dancing and shit. So I mean, I feel for that, but I don't know, was it me or did you guys also just always, maybe not always because I don't think she was always like this, but. For as long as she's been a monster, I can kind of sense it. I think I've sensed it for like the, I'm going to say the past like 10 to 15 years. I'm like, there is just something mean spirited and fake about that smile. I don't know why. She reminds me of.
The fake I felt for sure. The fake I definitely felt. I never got a mean, but I definitely got a fake from her.
I got a mean. I got like, she always reminded me of any chick I worked in an office with that would just make snide remarks from across the conference table in a meeting, and I was like, oh, I fucking hate you. I got that vibe from her. Now, here's the thing. She didn't come from money, and for those of you that are not caught up on the story, there's just tons and tons of stories about Ellen DeGeneres being a toxic, abusive, shitty person, not just to her staff, but to guests on her show, and just people have the misfortune of crossing paths with her. Like, she'll go into a restaurant, she won't like the waitress's nails, and she'll get her fired. Like, that level of sociopath. Wow. And that's I'm not making that one up either. That's one of the real ones. So the thing is, though, you'd expect that from a Chet Hanks, for example.
By the way, hey, do you think that, like, if that happened to you, could you legitimately go to the person who gave you a manicure and be like, all right, I at least need a refund. This shit got me fired.
You legit got me fired.
I'm so really bad at your job that somebody walked in and went, I'm offended to eat around these nails. I need this person out of here. Not just for today, forever.
Yeah, but then that manicurist goes, okay, but was it Ellen? Like, all right, you got me. Yeah.
I'm just really hoping
or was it Chet Hanks?
I'm hoping we get a cease and desist from Chet Hanks' lawyer.
You're just asking to be in his next fucking diss track, sir.
Yeah, that's Dave Callan's talking shit about you, Chet. I'm actually promoting you in a lot of ways. There's going to be a lot of YouTube hits today.
Hey, I'm up to 4 hits today. Wow, what happened?
So you'd expect that from someone who like came from privilege or money, but Ellen legitimately came from like stand-up. You know, I don't know what her life pre stand-up was like, but I don't imagine she was a one percenter. And you know, she did something very courageous in the 90s. She came out on live television and she risked her career for it. So it just baffles me that she would morph into this. Now, Dave, you have a degree in psychology. I want you to weigh in on this. Do you think that maybe a person this nasty was always like that, or do you think she was corrupted by 25 years of fame and money?
I think the corruption definitely helped, but I always feel like when someone has this much of like an ingrained character, like you said, so many stories came out, it was always there.
Yeah.
But then her getting this platform just amplified it. Like once she got famous, she got the show and everyone loves her and everyone's kissing her ass. And she's just surrounded by yes people constantly just telling her everything she does is gold. And that just magnified it and really it erased any buffer that she would have had. because she didn't need to like hide that anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's my take. I don't know. Bobby, what do you think?
Well, two things. One, it's got to suck. There's got to be some kind of sucky part to having that happen to you when the person is like a very lithe woman, right? Like something about where you're
what are you suggesting?
You're like 110 pounds and you're being horrible to me. So what's funny about like anything like that is if somebody takes pleasure from like other people's pain, there's a lot. I mean, I'm sure there's probably some of that that can be learned, but a lot of that is like an ingrained personality characteristic that like you either have or you don't, right? Like there's somebody who likes torturing cats when they're 12 for the same reason they like fucking with people when they're 35, you know?
Yeah,
like
it's, when they're trying to make a living.
It's the same thing. It's the same person. So like right. She's probably, if she was that, if like, let's give her the benefit
so
of the doubt.
She tortured cats.
And say, you know, if all the stories are true.
Oh, there's a family in Ellen's freezer.
Yeah, uh-huh. if all of those are true and like all of those horrible things, it sounds like she takes pleasure in harming people, that's a pathological condition that doesn't usually come around later in life, right? Like that's interesting. Let's go back in time and see how many like cats she had at 12.
And do you think that I don't think she could come back from this. They're like she's trying to do damage control. By the way, that fucking apology of hers was goddamn garbage. She was like, here's basically what her apology was. I really love this. Like all these stories have come out about her being a fucking asshole. And all of a sudden she's like, hey guys, I've heard that other people on my show suck. Oh my gosh, this is news to me. Let me just say, first of all, that's not my fault. I can't control what other people do. Secondly, I just really thought you guys could all get along without my supervision, but I guess I can't. What is that, a fucking threat? And then lastly, I've heard that there's been certain people making up fibs about me that I'm a terrible person. Shame on you. I am a lesbian. The end.
Is that verbatim?
Yeah, pretty close.
Pretty much.
She did invoke being part of the LGBT community because she's like, hey, I know what it's like to be different. I almost lost my career in the 90s. So the fact that you all are saying this about me, you're risking me losing my career again. How dare you?
I think there's just a degree of sociopathy to her where, like, she legitimately does not think other people have value to their life. Like,
yeah.
Upset. She's like, well, of course, you're just a production assistant. Why would I fucking talk to you ever? Why do you don't deserve a home. Get off my, you know, she sees no value in anyone beneath her.
No, yeah. And I know, I've come to know that there's more people like that than I ever realized, you know, like, I don't want to spill the tea on the air, but I interviewed someone on this show.
Chet Hanks?
Yes. Yeah. He's actually a delight. So, Bobby, how dare you? No, I interviewed someone. I'm like, what's this? I asked about a celebrity that he used to be friends with. And he basically said, like, if you're not also famous, you are nothing to him. He'll feign, you know, whatever for a picture and an autograph because he understands that all fans are just cannon fodder. But like, if you are not famous, your fame determines your worth as a human being to this person. And a lot of them are like that.
By the way, can we do a real quick side note here? Ellen famously had that first kiss. When was that? Like 98, Dave?
Something like that. What? I'm the old one here? Okay, you're right.
Yeah. So she had that kiss in 98. This is what's really interesting, especially if anybody is, you know, in their early 20s. You grew up in a very different world than we grew up in because the idea of a lesbian kiss, which, by the way, is the least like masculine ego threatening of the gay kisses, but like lesbian kiss on television and not daytime television, like after 9-something television, nighttime television was unthinkable. People were pulling sponsorships. There was just a big deal about this.
Oh my God. I remember the public service announcement that went out shortly after that. It was black and white footage of Ellen walking to the stage the night that she came out. Over there's a woman's voice going, every Wednesday you have a friend. That friend comes into your living room for half an hour. And then after years, she comes out and tells you that she's a lesbian. do you also find this inappropriate? I remember that so clearly.
People were upset, dude. You'd think they showed a nipple on an NFL halftime show.
Yeah.
But it's such an interesting world. It's so interesting how quickly that tide changed. Because in reality, there was insane amounts of homophobia that are unimaginable to anybody growing up within the last 15 years. Because so much progress was made in such an insanely short time. And it's like, if you ever watch The Wire, in one of the first seasons of The Wire, one of the main characters is a lesbian. And somebody has to explain it to her captain. And it's like a big deal because she gets shot. You would think, now, watching that was in 2002. Watching that, you go, what the fuck? Why is it this guy's business? Who the fuck cares? Why this would be a
That's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
And this is where Ellen's like, you're welcome, America. I did this.
The closest thing to an issue this would be in modern day things in a bureaucracy like the police department, when a captain had to come ceremoniously down, is maybe he might raise an eyebrow and he could get sued for that. So you watch it and you go, this is insane and ridiculous. But that was the reality of the world in 2002. You know, and
and Ellen did this in 1997. Honestly, I do want to give the devil her due. She did a very courageous thing that I do think led to some change as far as homophobia in the media. I want to give her that. But I think that in a way, she kind of coasted on that as far as her mean behavior goes. I think she even came out and pretty much said it in her little faux apology. All right, I was one of the first major television personalities to come out in the 90s. I'm gonna smack the coffee out of this intern's hand.
Yeah, I mean, good people can do bad things, bad people can do good things. You know, just because somebody achieves something or does something good doesn't mean they are necessarily good themselves. But
and yet you won't even listen to Chet Hanks's mixtape. You won't even listen.
Yeah, fucking just rant. You know what? Chet right now is looking at the numbers bouncing up, and he is laughing all the way to the bank.
He's Tom Hanks's son. He lives at the bank, Bobby. Don't worry about the bank.
It's called the degenerate bump. You get up, you know, the numbers surge.
No, that's an STD. You're thinking of something else. One thing that is interesting to me about Ellen, a friend of mine brought up that everyone just seized on this opportunity to tear her down, which from all accounts, she does seems to deserve it. But a friend of mine brought up, you have to imagine there's at least a dozen males in Hollywood who do exact same thing, and it's just fine. The people picked Ellen when guys have been doing it for decades.
Well, yeah, but one could argue they're getting their comeuppance too.
I would
right
say
now.
A lot of those dudes did not fare too well in 2015. Was it 2015? Was that the
year?
Yeah,
just about. Yeah.
I would say a lot of those guys did not fare that well, and good, because, you know.
Well, I'm not
should...
even talking about just me, too. I'm talking about just asshole toxic environment people, you know? Just
yeah. I mean, but it's all coming out.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of, that was a peg on a lot of people. And that would kind of imply that you shouldn't go after somebody who was being horrible because they were a woman or because they were a lesbian or something. If somebody's being horrible, you should call them out, and saying hey, this other guy didn't get called out, that's not an excuse. That's just going hey, look, he's yeah, listen, I did rob this person, but that guy stabbed somebody.
Right. It's whataboutism for sure. Yeah. I'm starting to learn that all of Hollywood is toxic, you know?
Oh yeah.
I think we bring out the goddamn guillotines and give everyone that's working the store a shot.
Well, what I think is interesting is now that there's so much ability to create content, you see these studios popping up. Georgia does a bunch of the stuff for Comedy Central. It does Archer and a bunch of those cartoon things. A lot of those things come out of Georgia. And it's why not? You can draw things in Georgia. You can have a sound booth in Georgia. You know, you don't need to pay super high rents and stuff, and you don't need super expensive equipment. And the nice thing about not needing super expensive equipment is, instead of just whoever can afford the cameras, i.e. some studio or something, it's kind of who's funniest that tends to float to the top of the internet, right? Because it's not just whatever NBC puts on Thursday night is what you have to watch. It's everybody likes this. It's going viral because it's really funny.
Oh, yeah. If only it was such a meritocracy, that would be nice.
It's not always a meritocracy, but there is way more of a meritocracy in that system than one when there was three networks that were you're kind of funny, but you don't have big
Let's just
words.
Recycle the same premise through all our sitcoms, and if we run out of ideas, we'll insert some fast-forward running. That's always funny. Let's just do that in every sitcom. Fast-forward running.
Yeah, I wish I could have been a sitcom writer in the 70s, because I feel like that really was the cushy gig, especially if you add in all the commercials and times, and they have like half-hour sitcoms and stuff. Plus, you do like a five-minute intro for some reason that nobody knows about that just plays the same thing every single week. But between all of that, you really have like 17 minutes of writing to fill, and I don't think in too many of those they filled more than about 1 minute of writing throughout that 17 minutes.
Right. There was always the same premise, you know, but you know what I'd love? Sometimes they'd shake it up a bit with one of those very special episodes. Who the fuck were those for? Was there a minimum amount of very special episodes they had to do? And I would love to be the pitch guy for that. Just like some guys doing the typical thing, like, okay, so this week I'm Mr. Belvedere, Mr. Belvedere, he wants to throw a party, the family's going to be out of town, and they come home early, and all his guests are in the other room, and then some guy's like, how about Wesley gets molested by his t-ball coach? Like, yeah.
Dude, you want to know the biggest irony to that there was like a lot of this like dare money that was going around to movie studios and stuff in the early 90s.
There was money and dare?
Oh, dude.
Yeah, I'm just as surprised as you, Ryan.
There was tons of this like private...
Those t-shirts weren't cheap.
They were basically promoting stuff, and in doing so, that's why you saw those. I mean, that is why they had those episodes, is because somebody paid them a fuckload of money to do it. And what's really ironic...
What was their incentive? What was their end game? Because I know it wasn't actually keeping kids off drugs. That's apparent.
Well, I mean, if that's kind of the DARE program's thing, none of it makes sense, but they spend a fuckload of money. But
all right, we're going to send an abusive cop to your school who's going to break dance and tell you about the dangers of smoking. DARE. What?
You might think weed is safe, but it's actually worse than heroin.
Dude, am I the only one that where you'd get called into assembly 3 times a year and there'd be a cop breakdancing or playing acoustic guitar or something, and they thought that was the best way to keep kids off drugs?
Or a jump rope marathon, in either one. But here's the most ironic part of that. So think about this: like those anti-drug programs, they weren't all DARE, but a lot of them were. These anti-drug programs would pay like TV shows, really mainstream TV shows. Like you said, Mr. Belvedere, Saved by the Bell has a famous one. They would pay them tons of money to produce these bullshit, horribly written, basically PSAs for the DARE program. And where do you think all that money went? To producers in Hollywood. What do you think they were spending it on in the late 80s and early 90s DARE program?
Oh, yeah.
You fucking funded a Hollywood coke boom in the early 90s. You dumb motherfuckers.
Life, Bobby.
You
get on board.
Dumb motherfuckers.
How do you think those cops had the energy to breakdance at so many school assemblies in one day?
It's not even a cop. They're just out-of-work actors.
Just out-of-work actors.
They weren't even supposed to breakdance. They just started on.
He was trying to show he was a triple threat.
Oh my god, we gave him the cop uniform. We said just go out there and say have a safe day. He's been up there for 3 hours. He's sweating profusely. He's on his third encore. I don't know how to get him off.
I gotta say though, fucking killer Hamlet.
I think we should pull the fire alarm. I think that's the only way to get him out of there. We got a bunch of coked out firefighters gonna show up here.
I love the idea of a sitcom based on a group of early 90s actors that have been conscripted to play cops in the DARE program while they themselves are coked up out of their mind. Dave, we got to start writing this.
Oh, my God. Hey, listen, all the Hollywood types are getting Me Too'd. I think there's room for us to make this pitch. Why are we not already writing this script? So, Bobby, we have a listener question. And it's a little bit of vigilante justice. Hit the music.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Vigilante justice. Vigilante, vigilante justice.
Okay, this comes from our buddy Colin. Colin was wronged, and it hits me in a way that it's very personal. His car was towed out of his apartment parking lot.
Oh,
where
now,
he has
now hold on. Is there a thing where he's supposed to have a placard up, or like does he need a sticker or something?
No,
like he's
he This place is too lazy and cheap for all that fanfare. They just have a no tow list. They have a list. They have a list. They have cars and license plates. Like, all right, if you see a silver Honda with a 7E09 plate, that one doesn't get towed. It's one of ours. So I don't know who was asleep at the wheel here, but his normal car. He wasn't borrowing a car. It wasn't a rental. His normal car got towed out, and obviously this wasn't by the apartment complex themselves. No one called. This is one of those predatory fucking tow yards that go around and go, "Oh, can I get that one?"
Yeah.
Because they have incentive. They get to hold your car at $300 a day until you come get it. It happened to me. That's why I'm so fucking worked up about this. It happened to me. I expired tags like 7 years ago. I was parked on the street, and a tow truck driver, not a cop, just came by and went, "Oh, well, those are expired tags. You're coming with me." And when I came there, I'm like, "Did someone call on my truck?" He's like, "No, I saw your expired tags. You're not supposed to have expired tags." I'm like, "What business is
this?" That's like the most Wild West shit to still be happening in this day and age.
They're just allowed to steal cars and ransom them back to you.
Well, yeah, so there seems to be a weird gap in knowledge here, though, because this guy's just going through. If you're right, if you have a legal issue, so if your registration's out, I think they can just take you, though.
I looked into it. I made sure this guy had fucking crossed all his goddamn T's.
But that's different than having a contract on private property to remove a car from a parking lot. There, they have to have the consent of the manager. So somebody at that dude's apartment complex had to call or give permission or something to allow that to leave.
I'm sure, and I didn't probe for all the details.
Yeah.
I'm sure this manager just said, "Hey, if you ever come by here and there's a car that is not on this list, you know, $300 for you." You know, that's probably the consent they needed.
Yeah, but no,
yeah,
it's
just like
it's
a standing order.
The paper,
yeah, standing order.
The paper that they bring, that they have to like sign it and stuff. So like, in fact, that paperwork is probably accessible by him. He could probably go figure out who it was that signed off on that tow. But here's the thing, because this is super, super shitty. But this hits me hard, too, because this exact fucking thing happened to my wife at her job that she had been working at for 9 months. She also was the person in the office who signed the lease with the manager, and the manager was the guy who got it towed. And for those of you guys...
Let me see that signature. Who signed this? Chet Hanks!
Yeah. And here's what he said. He towed her at like 10:30 or 11 in the morning. She had gotten there at 9. He said it was there for too long. The car was there for too long. That didn't make sense. Also, you might go, well, maybe he didn't recognize that it was your wife's car, even though, again, same thing with the license plate system. Those people wouldn't know that my wife's car has some badass flames painted on the side of it. So it's pretty hard to not know that it is her car. Like, there is no other Ford
Jill
Escape.
Has Guy Fieri flames on her fucking car?
No, not Guy Fieri flames. They're tasteful flames.
Maybe there's a no flame decal policy in the closet.
Maybe no shitty, tacky ass decals. Jill, I'm so disappointed in you.
But it is true. You still have to pay the tow fee. But what we did with that is she went and said, "What the fuck did you do?" And he's like, "Oh, I didn't know it was your car." He gave some bullshit explanation. But regardless, he then drove with her to the tow yard and he paid them and they got it out.
And that's the call. So Colin went to the tow yard.
I'm sorry. Let me just jump in real quick. Yeah. I like that Bobby assumes that these companies have paperwork.
They do. Because it's a legal thing. A tow is a legal thing. So, like, they do when they have a license and everything.
You know, Bobby,
I'd be willing to bet there's no paperwork involved.
Yeah, Bobby, you're supposed to. Yes, you're supposed to. But most tow truck drivers I've seen with their belly hanging out of their work shirt, not very litigious dudes.
Yeah.
But anyway, Colin went to the tow yard. They gave a big old bucket of not my problem and said, "Take it up with your
told them. He said, "Hey, this car is on the do not tow list."
Yeah, which I have right here. And they said, "Too bad. Give us $200. That's the nice price. And take it up with your management company," who in turn just said, "Take it up at the tow yard." They're the ones that made the mistake. So he's caught in that retarded ping pong where everyone gets to pass the buck back at each other, but no one will pick up the phone and talk directly. What should he do?
So legally, the tow yard is right. Legally, it is not the tow yard's fault. Like I said, whatever happened, whatever thing they had, it is the in private property. It is the manager of that property needs to like sign something or call them or notify them or whatever. And if not, and if they have some kind of pre-standing agreement, then that would probably be illegal, but also not be really enforceable. So like the management company 100% owes him that fee, and you could probably also charge him like a cleaning fee or some bullshit. Or so like I had to take an Uber to get there. You could charge him that too. I would go to them and just say, listen, these are the facts. This got towed from your property. This is private property. This is your contractor. It is your legal responsibility to fulfill this. Here's my legal right to park here, signed in the lease. My car is on this list. You stole my car. One of the things that I told...
This is boring vigilante justice. That,
well, hold on.
I want cop uniforms.
Well, I was about to get to the good part, which is, this is what I told my wife when this happened to us. And she was like, yeah, I don't know.
Threatened him with sexual violence.
No, she's like, yeah, he's like... He's going to pay for it, and there's no question about that. So, like, that's not an issue. He's just not sorry about it. And I was so livid. I was like, don't even let him pay for it. I want him to be sorry. This is worth it.
What?
This is worth it. I just want to go yell at this guy. My threat to that guy was, that I wanted to make to him was, I'm just going to call the cops and tell them you stole my car. You had no legal right to take my car. You stole it. That is stealing, which it is. And if they didn't have that paperwork with a manager's signature on it, that's Grand Theft Auto. They stole his car.
Just because you have Ace Toe written on the back of your burglary tools does not make this legitimate.
And so because I'm me and I was angry, even though my wife was handling it and it was going fine, I was still pissed that he wasn't angry about it. I literally called the San Diego Police Department. I was like, hey, if somebody towed my car and they don't have a right to tow my car, is that Grand Theft Auto? He goes, yeah, it happens all the time. And yes, it is. It can be. It depends on the rules and like what happened and if it's public or private property. And we take those cases all the time. So like that's a thing that does happen. So you can actually file that, and it would be against the management company.
All right. Okay. There you go.
Sorry.
Not this as sexy as his normal advice, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, no, sorry.
No stink bombs.
This is more like, I feel so bad for you, buddy, that somebody's fucking dick. Like, first of all, not just the money. So let's say the $200, like I said, he had to get there. But just like the inconvenience. What if you just walked out of your house one day and your car wasn't there? That's a major, I can't go to work today. Like, this is a major inconvenience, right? Like, that sucks. So I feel really bad.
The worst thing about these tow companies is they're not out any product. Like, they could easily give that money back. They haven't lost anything. You know, I mean, they're just being assholes about it.
Right.
It's if someone ordered a pizza and they sent the pizza and you're like, I never ordered this. Like, we're out this for all these ingredients and this labor.
Yeah, we're out $18 in materials. Sure.
Yeah. Tow truck is out nothing.
They're out quite a bit because A, diesel ain't cheap, and B, and those things don't get good mileage.
It's not $200.
No, not only that, but those guys actually earn quite decent money. So like you are out because you're still
have
to pay that guy.
That's their salary. They haven't lost anything.
Yeah. I agree.
I think they should do it just out of morality. How about that? Like, I don't know. I'm sure they have lost something. You quantify some gas or some time or some other thing you could have been doing at that time. But
I could have been listening to Chet Hanks' new album.
How about just the morality of we stole this guy's car? I think the place should have done it. But quite frankly, legally, they're in the right. If somebody got them towed from private property, that's on the person who authorized the tow from private property.
All right.
And now we're back to my original point. This is some wild, wild west bullshit that tow companies just take something.
Yeah.
But only private, like, right? Like, so if you parked in my driveway, I could call a tow company and get them to take it because it's my
Yeah,
my
but
house.
No, if like you said, if they could drive around and see expired tags and just take the car.
That's different. So you're not
but
legally.
But that's bullshit.
Allowed.
I'm not saying it's not the
sure,
law. I'm saying it's bullshit.
I agree. I actually think that's bullshit, too.
Yeah, and also, by the way, he's like, the guy was like, oh, you can't have this back till you go pay your tags. I'm like, oh, so we're policing me now. How convenient this has to stay here for another day at $375 per.
Dude, that happened to me. Ryan, I don't know if you remember this. Last, about a year and a half ago, my tags expired just because I forgot. I'd moved and the DMV sent me the wrong address, so I never got them, and I forgot about it. So I got a ticket for expired tags. Okay. And then I was trying to get new tags, so I got another ticket in the interim. And then, like, my tags were on the way in the mail, and I was getting a third ticket. I was at work, and I saw somebody outside writing me a ticket for my car. So I ran out of the bar. I'm like, hey, I've already gotten two tickets. Tags are on the way. And he's like, sorry, I have to write this. I'm like,
No, you don't.
You don't have to write this.
You demonstrably don't.
Yeah. But he did. He's like, I got to write it. And he wrote me a third fucking ticket for it.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm not dignifying that with the music.
I really hope he gets some money back because that's a really shitty situation, dude. Yeah. That sucks. I'm sorry.
So, Bobby, you had a story you were excited to tell us, and I'm excited to hear it.
So this is funny. So what's interesting about my gig is that sometimes I'm doing like fun cross-country archaeology stuff, and sometimes I'm doing really boring stuff where I watch construction crews work, and I just look to see if they hit an archaeology site, especially if there's one nearby. And with me, there's a person who's a Native American who's watching to make sure I do my job and also make sure those things get collected and stuff. And sometimes there's another person who's there who's doing some other gig. Maybe there's a geologist or a biologist or something. In this case, it was us two, and we were watching them like dig a trench and put some stuff in the trench, and that was basically the gig. And so you end up.
I feel like they don't like you. Is that right? They don't like you?
I mean, I get it.
Yeah. The construction workers, a lot of them don't, but I am useful because I also know a fuckload about construction. So like when they all start talking about, they're like, oh, we ran.
That's a hammer.
Yeah. Well,
pointing at a screwdriver.
Don't get me wrong. They know they're much better at their jobs. They're great at their jobs. They're construction workers, but a lot of them are like 27 or 28. And I've been like seeing people do this work for a long, long time. And so like I've seen them do very creative things that
I've been watching people work for a very long time.
Yeah.
I usually have a coconut full of with liquor and an umbrella.
They didn't even have somebody fanning me this time, so I felt kind of offended. But
yeah, you're roughing it.
Yeah, but so I will notice things or problems that are happening, and I'll point it out to the foreman, and they'll correct it. And
you're the worksite snitch. Very good.
No,
don't like you.
It's not like that. These are small crews. Like they're all trying to solve problems. So like it's
foreman just, Terry's not wearing his helmet.
No, like backwater issues, but like just regardless, it is. Yeah, we're okay. We're a decent relationship. But so in this case, there was not only myself and a Native American monitor, but there was a guy there who does some engineering stuff. But he only had to be there for 15 to 20 minutes at a time when they were doing certain things with water valves. And then other times he just had to sit there and just like stand with the rest of us. And so obviously you talk to people a lot in this gig because like, you know, if you're in a gig where you're talking to customers as they're coming in and stuff, you have little tiny conversations. But if you're standing next to the same person for
so you're the
hours,
Walmart greeter of archaeologists. Yeah. Am I getting that correctly?
Yeah. Oh, dude, when I do monitoring, it's mind-numbing. But sometimes I find cool stuff, so it's worth it. But when you're doing that, you talk to somebody a lot. You talk a lot. You talk for hours and hours and hours a day. It's like being at camp when you were a kid. Because that's it. You have to stand there. You have to be in the same place. You have to be watching this thing. And you're standing next to this other person who you're either going to ignore or talk to, right? And so you get to know people. You get to know people fairly quickly.
I know my answer.
And this dude, the other guy who was there, the engineer type guy, fairly well off. Actually quite well off. Grew up in Northern County, let's say. Northern County, west of the five, let's say.
So he had money. He didn't earn his money from this job. He was...
No, and he's young. Very young.
Okay.
But he's also working hard and, you know, making some money on his own, too. You know, went off, got some degrees and doing his thing. But has... also comes from just very, very, very wealthy family and people around him being very wealthy. And it was funny because I got to watch him do the, like, foot-in-the-mouth thing probably a dozen times a day without him realizing it. And I kept trying to like tip him off, but it didn't always work. And what was funny is, so like, you got to imagine. So when I say, you know, grew up wealthy, I think he grew up in a pretty, pretty wealthy house in a very, very, very wealthy area, but also came from extended family that were like multimillionaires.
Well, yeah, he's rich.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really driving that point home, huh, Ryan?
Yeah. Well, it makes sense because...
He's establishing the hell out of this thing.
Well, also went to kind of like a nice school and just, you know, just kind of hadn't... I don't think he'd spend a lot of time...
He's better than us.
Didn't spend a lot of time in Barrio Logan. Regardless, he kept putting his foot in his mouth and trying to describe his philosophy on life. And this is like a 25-year-old
kid. Oh, okay. I'm on board now. I'm from Orange County. I love when people try... I love when people from privilege try and do this shit. It's great. Go ahead.
Well... He had a lot to say, and it was interesting. And the funny thing is, I could see like my 14-year-old libertarian self in him, and I'm like, I just want to mold you. But I was very subtle. I tried to be like, encouraging and talk a lot to him and stuff. But one of my favorite things is he kept being very oblivious to the world around him in hilarious ways. So at one point he's talking about how it would actually be really easy to be a black guy right now. And I was like, all right, I got to hear this. Let's go ahead.
Everyone stop working.
Keep in mind, and I mean this literally, if you looked at the two of us, I would be the black guy. So just keep that as, yeah.
Save that clip.
Yeah. And he goes, yeah, I think they got this reputation of things being really hard, but it's actually pretty easy. Like,
ooh, already.
And then he goes into, like, if I was a poor black teen right now, I know for a fact I could walk around my parents' neighborhood. He still lives with his parents. Which is, I'm not insulting. It's actually very fiscally responsible. It's good for him. But I would walk around my parents' neighborhood with a lawnmower and cut grass at like $10 a lawn. I would start hiring people and I'd be a millionaire soon. And I was like, all right, so you think the only thing between you and seven figures is the fact that you're not a poor black teenage boy.
And a lawnmower.
Right.
Hold on. Let me finish.
The reason this is so funny is he's saying that next to me. Now, to my extent, I grew up in the suburbs. You know, I never didn't eat. I was fine. I grew up in a house that was nice enough. But the other person who's saying this in front of my native monitor, I happen to know him a little bit. I've gotten to know him a bit. And he grew up on the res before the casino. He's about my age. And if you know the res before the casinos, like, to say ghetto is not something, like, there are parts of the res that are just...
No, I run a show in Alpine, which is near the res, and yeah. Just driving past it, I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, there are parts of some things, especially before the casinos, that were just really, really seedy, and before they had a bill where the sheriffs could go in, so it was lawless, because there was no cops there. The cops literally couldn't come in, it was federal land. And so, like, it was some rough shit, and it makes, like, the ghetto here almost seem nice, and I mean that quite literally. And I know that this guy grew up in that, and I know just how horrible, horrible it must be. And there is a dude who's, like, a 10 years younger than us or more, who's explaining to us that, yeah, he grew up as a multimillionaire, but if he could only be a black teenager with a lawnmower right now, he would be fucking raking in the cash.
So, Bobby, like I said, I've had some experience with this growing up in Orange County, and then, like, talking to those people later where I left and they never did. And here's the thing about Orange County. There are parts there where billionaires live, all right? Legitimate billionaires. Like, I heard someone describe...
Like Chet Hanks?
Yeah, like Chet Hanks. And Ellen. I heard someone describe recently, I think it was on, like, ABC 2020, they were doing a story that took place in Newport Beach. They're like, Newport Beach is where millionaires and billionaires go when they've run out of ways to spend their money. Okay, that's the kind of place. So... People from Orange County, they like to try and let you know, I'm from Orange County, but not the upper echelon. Here's how they do it. Like, yeah, I'm from Orange County, but I mean, we didn't have a boat or anything, you know. Like, that's your way of saying you keep it real, you didn't have a boat? No, well,
have a boat.
It was a sailboat. But like, I'm not trying to say that I had it hard. I'm just saying, well, you know, I'm just saying everyone in Orange County does have a boat, and when everyone has a boat and you don't have a boat, I'm just saying that, you know, it gets a little awkward sometimes. Like, so let me get this straight. Now, you're twisting words here. I'm just saying most people, stop laughing. It goes on like that. Like, okay, most people had a mansion. I mean, I also did, but it wasn't as nice as my friends.
It was absolutely a noticeably smaller mansion than a lot of
it
other
was,
people.
Oh, I was the laughing stock of Spyglass Hill.
I would have had a better mansion if I owned a lawnmower, but unfortunately... Yeah,
unfortunately, the little black kid bought the last one.
The secondary unit is attached, not detached. So...
And I'm saying, my first car was used. I know struggle.
Well, what's nice is this kid is still young. He's a sweet kid. He's got a good heart. And I think, like, I feel like I planted enough seeds. Like, I just wanted to plant a few seeds. I was like, listen, I was a libertarian too. I didn't add that I, like, grew out of it much, much younger. But, like, I was like, it's okay. Like, I see where you're coming from. How about these points? Like, libertarianism has never worked in any government in history. Counterpoint. Huh. Go.
Well, Q says...
Counterpoint. Ellen. Libertarian.
okay, so like if you want libertarianism, it'd be like less government. You want to go towards less government, but all those countries that have like the better lifestyles and the higher GDP and the higher money and earnings and stuff all have like more socialist leaning democratic socialism. So like, shouldn't we go towards them as opposed to like the one who has less government, like, I don't know, Somalia? Like, shouldn't we be more like Norway and less like Somalia?
I don't know. Pirates are pretty cool.
I fucking love pirates. Have you seen those movies? They're having a ball.
Okay, you've changed my mind. it's not often that I'll admit that I'm wrong about a position like this, Dave, but you have changed my mind.
All right, let's call it a week. Guys, like I mentioned, I finally do have a show to promote August 28th? What did I say?
20th is a Friday, is that?
August 28th, Chula Vista at the Bay Bridge Brewing is going to be a socially distanced outdoor show. See me return to stand-up, and if I even have any material that's relatable anymore. Guys, do you have anything to promote coming up?
I want to promote a Chet Hanks appearance. He's going to be signing the CD at the mall.
I'm doing Nerd Night, and people already show up there who listen to this and my other podcasts, so hopefully you keep showing up to this. But
I feel like you just big-leagued us with that. Just
a few people just showing up, some DeGen fans who also happens to be Science Faction fans. By the way, I listen to Science Faction.
Or don't. All right, I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week. We are going to start doing this regularly again, cruising with the twos.
You fucking funded a Hollywood coke boom in the early 90s. You dumb motherfuckers.
All the circle of life, Bobby.
You
get on board.
Dumb motherfuckers.
Ooh, yeah, time passing by. Motherfucking time is passing by.